So happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Going to start our program today by talking with you about milk and non-dairy alternatives to milk. I think milk is a great beverage, and I think my guest today, Sue Nitzke, agrees with me. She's a professor in the Department of Nutritional Sciences, UW Extension Nutritional Scientist, and comes by every so often to talk with us about a variety of nutritional issues. And today we're kind of dealing with milk and then other alternatives to milk and how those beverages compare to the real thing. Certainly like your input as we go along. And if you have a question or a comment, you want to agree or disagree, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890. 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions or comments. Love to hear from you. Sue Nitzke, welcome back. Nice to have you with us again.
Good to be here, Larry.
And you are you're a milk proponent, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, I am. I think there are milk products that can work for just about anyone. Mm-hmm. But if people don't wish to drink milk for some personal reason or ethical belief or that sort of thing, I have some tips for them as well.
Okay. Nutritionally, are we missing out if we really don't drink milk?
It's not 100%, but I think it's very easy to miss some important nutrients if you don't have any milk or milk products in your diet. Milk is really the number one source of calcium, and I think everybody knows that. But national surveys have shown that people really rely on milk as well for things like potassium, magnesium, vitamin D, and vitamin A. There's actually a longer list, but those are the ones I'm prepared to discuss. And it's not that you can't get adequate amounts of those nutrients if you don't drink milk, but I would like your listeners to make sure they get adequate amounts of those nutrients if they don't drink milk, and to become judicious label readers so that they're not just taking for granted that the products that they're consuming instead have that same nutrient profile just because the word milk is in the name on the label.
Is there are there people who actually should not drink milk or who should switch from milk? I guess there's a milk intolerance or a lactose intolerance.
Yeah, well, there are even a few people with milk allergies. It's not the most common form of allergy, but they're the real true allergy that involves the immune system, people who have that condition have usually been diagnosed by a physician, most of the time an allergist who is board certified and you know, knows his or her profession very well. And for those few people, as I mentioned, it's probably less than 1% of the population, but for them it's a very real problem, and they can't have anything with any milk protein in it at all. So they wouldn't even eat ice cream, for instance. Now, many other people loosely use the term milk allergy when they're really referring to what more technically is an intolerance, meaning people who experience some sort of gas or bloating or kind of stomach discomfort or maybe even diarrhea after they have quite a bit of milk. That's called lactose intolerance, and that's more of just a body reaction to having the sugars in milk. It's called lactose, being incompletely digested in your system because the amount of lactase enzyme that takes care of that for us tends to decline with age and much faster in some people from some ethnic backgrounds than others. Anyway, the point of all of that is if you feel you have lactose intolerance, it usually doesn't mean you have to totally avoid milk or milk products, but it does mean that some judicious selections, like more emphasis on yogurt and cheeses rather than fluid milk, and more including your milk products with meals rather than all by themselves, and limiting yourself to the equivalent of about half a cup at a time to give the amount of enzyme that you have a chance to do its work. Those kinds of things can make a big difference and allow people with lactose intolerance to have milk products and not totally avoid them.
And there are milk products in lots of things.
Yes, there are milk products. That's another reason to become a good label reader, where you might not even stop to think about it. Like yesterday morning we had pancakes. I mean, I know pancake mix has milk in it, but if you weren't really thinking about it, you might miss that entirely. And especially for people with milk allergies, but even for people with lactose intolerance, they might want to take that into account. So reading, in that case, the ingredient label is an important thing to do.
Yeah. Well, we have callers online to visit with you about a variety of things here. So let's, and still some open lines. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Rick in Madison, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Rick. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I really enjoy the taste of rice milk, and I like to offset my I also use regular dairy products, but I'm just wondering why rice milk is so high priced. It just seems, compared to regular dairy products, at least in my head, it seems like it would be easier to produce, and it's so high priced.
Hmm.
Rick, I'm glad you asked about rice milk because there were a few things I wanted to mention about rice milk today. But the answer to why it's high priced, I think, is more of a function of the marketing of the product, the supply and demand, and
how many quantity producers there are.
Yeah. But I would like to encourage people who are using rice milk to understand that rice milk is not equivalent to milk. You can buy different brands, and some of them are more heavily fortified than others, so that some of the nutrients that are missing from rice that would normally be provided by milk would be added to that product to make it a better substitute. But you can't take that for granted, and I would really encourage people to look at the Nutrition Facts panel. Look for those nutrients I mentioned, not just calcium, but also vitamin D, vitamin A, and magnesium, and see if they're satisfied that this is a good enough product for them to drink instead of milk. And I'd say that that's especially important for young children. And the other thing I would add to that is we don't recommend rice milk as a substitute for milk for babies.
Hmm, interesting. Rick, does that help out?
Yep. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. I'm wondering about, and before we go back to the phones and get to Josh here in just a second, but back to milk for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering about the flavored milks that you see now. There's my daughter, for example, loves the strawberry milk.
Uh-huh.
And there's chocolate milk is another one. I recall deep in the recesses of my mind that chocolate milk, the chocolate in the milk sort of canceled out some of the good part. Is that true or not?
That's pretty much almost in what we now call urban myths. Or,
okay, well, that's good to know.
Yeah. Technically, the chocolate has a million compounds in it. One is trace amounts of oxalic acid, and oxalic acid is that thing in spinach and some other foods that can bind calcium a little bit and make it less absorbable.
Mm-hmm.
So then people put two and two together and got five, unfortunately, and studies have shown that chocolate milk's calcium is just as available as any other calcium. So that's not really the problem.
Because I like chocolate milk.
I do too, but there's a lot of added sugar in chocolate.
There sure is.
Well, these days you can actually get artificially sweetened chocolate milk, but that's another issue. I have mixed feelings about chocolate milk. I mean, I would hope that children don't drink chocolate milk as their only source of milk and, you know, stamp their feet and have a fit if there's no other milk around. But you should recognize that there is quite a bit of added sugar, and you know, sugar, when it's added to food, represents calories that don't carry their weight in nutrients.
Sure.
So it's something to keep in mind, but it's not a reason to totally avoid or forbid chocolate milk.
What about strawberry milk? Strawberry flavors, same thing?
Same thing. It usually is accompanied by added sugar and either natural or artificial flavors to give it the strawberry flavor.
All right.
But the milk is milk, and so that part is still good.
That's still good. Good. Josh in Boscobel, it's your turn now. Hi, Josh. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question regarding organic soy milk for my 2.5-year-old daughter.
Yeah.
If she sees that, she's got to have it, and that's what she wants to drink exclusively. Mm-hmm. We mix it. She gets a bunch of other dairy products, but I've read a couple places where they said the increased estrogen levels in the soy milk can cause problems for young women later on?
Josh, I'm glad you asked about that, too. That's been a kind of a controversy within the field. And as many things become controversy, it's usually because we have incomplete information. There was some, well, let me back up just a second. I'll try to give you an answer that's not a half hour long. One of the reasons that women like to drink soy milk is because it has some compounds that mimic estrogen in the body. So, in other words, they're helpful in maintaining your bone strength and that sort of thing. Now, by logical extension, you don't want to be giving a lot of something that has something in it that's like estrogen to little kids in case that has an unwanted effect on their metabolism or how they are their normal level of hormones. And there's been a number of studies with different results, and it's really hard to sort out. But the experts in the field are saying now that most of the studies are reassuring that soy milk is indeed okay for children. And soy formulas are, I'll call it, okay for babies. They're not the number one preferred source of formula, but they are an okay alternative for people who don't want to use a formula made with milk and they choose not or cannot breastfeed.
Mm-hmm. Does okay, that it? Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it.
Oh, and Rick from Boscobel, don't forget to check the label and make sure it has calcium and vitamin D.
Okay.
All right. That's a very good thing to remember. Ethan in Madison, it's your turn now. Hi, Ethan.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a question with regard to chocolate milk versus juice. I heard from my wife mentioned that she had heard from both a nutritionist and a doctor, a pediatrician, that that chocolate milk is the better choice than natural juice. Now, for me, that sounds like bunk because despite the calcium and the vital nutrients that you get from chocolate milk, the number two ingredient in much of chocolate milk is, like you said, added sugar. It's high fructose corn syrup, which is probably the most destructive carbohydrate one can have, whereas the sugars in juices are 100% natural, provided it's natural juice. What do you think about that?
Well, I think there's a lot of mixed information in the explanation that you just put behind your question, Ethan. As I mentioned, chocolate milk, the first ingredient and the most prevalent ingredient is indeed milk. And it depends on what nutrients you're looking for. I mean, juice is usually a good source, like orange juice is a good source of vitamin C and potassium and some other nutrients. So it's not that juice is bad for kids, but if you rely on calcium-fortified juice, you have to also look for those other nutrients I mentioned, the vitamin D, vitamin A, magnesium, that sort of thing. And you have to think about, okay, they're not added sugars in juice, but if you look at just hold the two labels up side by side per serving, the carbohydrate content, which in milk and juice is almost all sugar, whether it's added or mm-hmm. in the form of chocolate milk, there's lactose from the original milk and then sucrose that's added for the sweetening. And in juice, it would be the naturally occurring sugars from the oranges or whatever fruit was used to make the juice. So they're both actually high sugar products. In fact, the American Academy of Pediatrics and the Dietary Guidelines for Americans and lots of other groups, the American Dietetic Association, et cetera, recommend that parents be careful not to give their kids too much juice because it's such a convenient source of calories. And because of its sweet flavor, kids can actually have too much of what would be a good thing for maybe a serving a day.
I was told, and correct me on this, but a glass of orange juice, is say a normal 8-ounce glass of orange juice, is something like the equivalent of eating four oranges in terms of the amount of sugar. Is that another myth?
Yeah, or? I'd have to look that up, Larry. I think it sounds like they'd have to be pretty small oranges. But
there is a lot of sugar concentration of about four oranges.
Yeah, I could look it up for you, and I'd be glad to do that maybe when you during the news.
Suffice to say, it's larger.
But it could very well be. And the whole idea is, how does it fit with your total day's intake? You know, if your child is getting most of their fruit in the form of whole fruit, and they have a cup or maybe a half a cup might be better for a small child of juice a day, I wouldn't squawk about it. But if really the only fruit they get on most days is juice, then I think that's something to be concerned about and try to get most of the fruit in your diet and your children's diet in the form of whole fruit.
Whole fruit, yeah. Actually, we've sort of given up on orange juice in the morning. We rather have an orange. or other fruits, whatever it happens to be in the season, than rather than have the juice, just because.
Yeah, there's really pros and cons, and orange juice is very convenient, and I wouldn't say to the listeners that they shouldn't drink orange juice anymore.
No.
But I think, you know, keep it in moderation and emphasize sources of whole fruit when they're economical and convenient and fit mm-hmm. into your meal or your snack.
Whole fruit
makes a great snack.
Thanks, Ethan. Appreciate the call. Sue Nitzke, UW Extension Nutritional Scientist, our guest here as we talk with her about milk and other alternatives. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer, you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking with Sue Nitzke, UW Extension Nutritional Scientist, today about milk and other dairy products and other non-dairy products and alternatives as well with her. And glad to have you listening in. Just to let you know, we're going to be continuing sort of along the dairy lines and talking about cheeses coming up at about 11:45 today with Dave Leonardi. But for now, we're zeroing in a bit more on milk. If you want to join in, the number to call 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Let's go to Kaz in Waukesha next. Kaz, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks. I was interested in hearing a little bit about BGH, bovine growth hormone, and how that affects us in the milk that we drink. And mm-hmm. I'll take my call off the air.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Well, whether you call it BGH or BST, BST stands for bovine somatotropin, which is the more technical term. It's levels, let's see, it's used to treat dairy cattle as an injection usually so that they produce it at the higher end of their capacity for milk production. And I can't say that it 100% cannot show up in the milk, but there's any cow from any pasture, whether the cow was treated with BGH, BST or not, will have some of this substance in their milk because it's a natural bovine hormone that does come out in milk. And the levels in the milk of treated cows are not discernibly different from the milk from untreated cows. So that would tell me that it's more of a personal decision. If you just don't like the idea of cows getting injected with things that you know, they would normally get from their diet, then you can buy BST or BGH free milk, or meaning milk that is from a cow that wasn't treated with this. You don't nobody puts it directly into the milk. Whether that's necessary from a nutritional standpoint, I'd say that's pretty doubtful. But if you want to do it from a personal standpoint, just to express your opinions about the subject, you can pretty readily find those products. And I can do that at Woodman's, and I'm sure you can do that at other stores that you shop at as well.
All right, Warren in Sherwood Hills, it's your turn. Hi, Warren.
Hey, good new year to everyone.
To you as well.
I've had some good experiences with milk through my life. Right now, my favorite is a 2% grass-fed milk that comes in cartons. Nice, fresh, cold milk to me is a delicious beverage, and it's healthy. A 2% is better for you, I guess. Buttermilk, cultured buttermilk, is another one of my favorites. And when I was a kid, we raised milk goats, and we had our pretty much endless supply of water-chilled, not pasteurized, goat milk. And that has a lot of benefits to you if you drink it. But I didn't like the off flavor because it really depended on what that goat ate the day before as far as what the milk would taste like.
Yep.
But I'd like to have Ms. Nitzke and Larry, you talk about the dangers of raw milk. And it's a glorified kind of a nutritional remedy. People say, oh, go out and get some raw, unpasteurized milk, you know, drink it. And there's a lot of dangers to drinking raw milk, even though it's a kind of a romanticized beverage. I much prefer and strongly recommend pasteurized products.
Yeah.
Well, I'm with you, Warren. Raw milk is milk that it has not been pasteurized. There actually is a way to pasteurize it at home if you insist on not buying it previously pasteurized. But I would never personally drink unpasteurized milk, and I would certainly be very concerned if anyone with any sort of immune susceptibility, or young children, or pregnant women, or, you know, there's a long list of people that just should not go anywhere near raw milk. I don't care what the marketers say.
Mm-hmm.
And the pasteurization of milk is so quick and so I don't know, it's just a very fast heating process that gets rid of almost all the pathogenic bacteria that might be there. And it's just a very safe practice that's been around for a long time, and I see no reason to drink raw milk.
Mm-hmm.
The other things about goat milk and grass-fed, milk from grass-fed cows. Goat's milk, it also has lactose. There are some people who tell me, you know, I have lactose intolerance, so I have to drink goat's milk. And, you know, sometimes I just bite my tongue and go on to the next subject. But really, goat's milk and cow's milk both have lactose. They both have the same kind of sugar. And if you have lactose intolerance, goat's milk is not the answer. If you like goat's milk and have access to it and want to use cheese made from goat's milk, I don't have any reasons to warn you about that. It's not acceptable as an alternative to infant formula or breast milk for babies. But other than that, it's just a personal choice. 2% made from the milk of grass-fed cows. As you know, in Wisconsin, in the winter, there aren't many cows that have access to pasture. So that becomes a difficult thing in, year-round in Wisconsin, whereas in some of the southern states, they can be in a... have access to a pasture all year round. These days, more and more cows, especially in some of the southwestern states, and your next guest is probably a better expert on this than me, spend almost all their life at a feedlot where the grain and the hay and stuff is brought into them, and they don't just roam free out in a pasture. When cows don't have access to the hay and grasses that would normally be in a pasture, the level of this substance called CLA, it's conjugated linoleic acid, is quite a bit lower. And CLA, that's the thing that Mike Parisa from the Food Research Institute has done like 20 years of research on. Mike Cook, Mark Cook, other people on campus have really researched this a lot. It has some beneficial properties. I wouldn't call it an essential nutrient. And most experts wouldn't call it an essential nutrient. But it's one of the reasons why some people prefer milk from grass-fed cows. I don't think it's an essential thing to do, but if you're kind of into that and want to go for it,
go ahead. Can
probably find the product. Mm-hmm. Myself, I don't go that far.
Don't worry about it. All right. Thanks, Warren, for calling. Jeannie in Hartford, it's your turn. Hi, Jeannie.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question has to do with calcium content. I've been told that the regular brand milks that we buy in the grocery stores are so heavily pasteurized, and they do not have as much calcium versus organic milk. I'm wondering if that's true.
I can't imagine why that would be true. Pasteurization doesn't affect the calcium content of the milk at all. And
it's
whether,
pretty stable, isn't
whether
it,
a product is organic or not really doesn't usually have any substantial effect on the nutrient content.
The pasteurization process would be, the heat process would be
right,
the same.
There's two main kinds of pasteurization, and one is just a lot faster than the other, but they're both just a quick heat treatment to kill off the microorganisms that might have gotten into the milk. Just from what might be have been remaining on the outside of the cow's udder or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But no, whether it's organic or not and whether it's pasteurized or not shouldn't make a big difference in the nutrient content of the milk, especially not the calcium. There'd be no reason that it would affect that.
Okay. What I was told is that the pasteurization kills the calcium, but you don't
think
that's
true. Know, there are so many myths floating around it sounds vaguely possible and scary, mm-hmm. and should I do that? But no, the pasteurization does not kill calcium, or I venture to say doesn't affect calcium at all.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Jean, for calling. Appreciate it. There, heat does or can affect something. But I'm trying to think now. Vitamin C, possibly? Is that one?
When milk isn't a good source of vitamin C anyway.
Right.
So
that's right. So what's the difference?
The nutrient profiles are practically identical.
Yeah. Mike and Amory, your turn now. Hi, Mike.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, I'm lactose intolerant, so I drink soy milk. I love the vanilla-flavored soy milk. But earlier in the show, your guest mentioned that soy milk contains estrogen. Well, then, of course, immediately my ears perked up. And I'm concerned about that. You know, as a normal, healthy 59-year-old male, do I have any concerns about the estrogen and soy milk giving me female attributes?
I'm so glad you asked. There was a caller who brought it up, and I was trying to clarify that, and I probably made it worse. There is an estrogen-like compound. It's actually derived from the plant. There's estrogen, by definition, is from mammals. But there's a compound in, it's called phytoestrogen, which means it's a sort of a plant variant of a similar molecule. And for women approaching menopause, there's been a lot written and researched about whether or not that can help with things like hot flashes and some of the symptoms of menopause. Most of those studies haven't shown that it's all that beneficial, unfortunately. And the bulk of the studies also show that the effects on the body are very weak. And to get to the bottom line for Mike and Amory, I wouldn't worry about it. It's not going to give you any female characteristics or anything like that. The amount of effect on your body is going to be very minimal.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Thanks for calling. And Ken in Oconomowoc, it's your turn now. Hi, Ken.
Hi. I was wondering, why isn't vitamin D added to yogurt and cheese and ice cream? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Yeah.
Boy, I wish I knew the answer to that, Ken. There's probably some technical reason. I don't think enough consumers have bothered to look and see. There have been some requirements for adding vitamin D to fluid milk, so it got started, and it's something now we expect to be in fluid milk. There's no reason it can't be added to yogurt and some other dairy products if the manufacturers wanted to put it in. At least from my non-technical perspective, it wouldn't be a difficult thing to do. But, you know, if it costs money and nobody cares if you put it in there or not, I think most manufacturers just don't bother.
And vitamin D, actually, if I'm not mistaken, aids in the absorption of calcium, and that's...
Right, that's one of the reasons. And these days, I don't know if you've had any of the vitamin D researchers from our campus on your show lately, Larry, but not only in our biochemistry department, but also in the medical school, we have several of the national, if not world-renowned, experts on vitamin D. And nationally, interest in the benefits of vitamin D beyond just what the great things it does for your bones is really increasing rapidly. And there's a huge emphasis on making sure you get enough vitamin D. And the groups that are especially critical to get enough vitamin D are people in the northern states or the northern latitudes in the winter. Like right now, Larry, yours and my level of vitamin D in our blood would be less than it was last summer unless we're using supplements. Young children and sometimes older adults, especially people who don't get out in the sun very often any time of the year because they're shut in or that sort of thing, or cover up a lot. I'm not suggesting that people get enough sun to have a sunburn, but I'm saying that a little bit of sun, especially summer sun, is very helpful for making sure that your body can produce vitamin D internally. And when that doesn't happen, like for all of us in Wisconsin in the winter, well, maybe Larry just was in Florida. but for the rest of us who are in Wisconsin enjoying the winter, it might not be a bad idea to talk to your physician about vitamin D supplements.
Mm-hmm. Actually, we take Renee and I take a little vitamin D supplement as well. And our doctor said it was a good thing. Judith and Madison, it's your turn now. Hi, Judith.
Hi. I just thought I would add this to the discussion about milk. I'm reading a novel called Zoli, and it's by Colm McCann, and it's just published. It's about gypsies, the Romani. And the scene that was taking place, I just read it last night, this young woman, Zoli, is crossing the border from Slovakia into Hungary. She's in the water, and her legs have been sliced by the border is in the middle of that lake. And she's cut, hungry, and so on. But she thought, as she crossed, the worst of times, and I thought I would keep on going for just a glass of milk. And a glass of milk is, if you will, gypsy law. not gypsy law, but tradition, that milk will keep your insides clean. And here she is, you know, near really starving and everything, but she's headed for a glass of milk.
Well, you know, Judith, that actually brings up an important point, and that is we have, I think all of us, whether we love milk, tolerate milk, don't go anywhere near milk, we have some not just what I call kind of cognitive issues, things that we know as factual information, but also a lot of emotional ties to what milk represents for us.
Yeah.
And that's true for many foods, but I think it's especially true for milk. And that's part of what all of us bring to our decision when we go to the store and decide what we're going to buy or when we are in a restaurant. And I respect those decisions. I respect those emotional ties. I just am asking all the listeners to also be, I guess, wise in your decision. And whether you think milk is wonderful and maybe want to have a quart a day, I wouldn't recommend that either. But I would try to have people understand that the dietary guidelines recommend that older children and adults, whether pregnant or not pregnant, lactating, not lactating, old or young, are supposed to have the equivalent of 3 glasses of low-fat or non-fat milk a day. And, you know, that for most Americans, that's more than they're consuming. So if you don't want to go all the way to 3 glasses at once, think about how to have an extra either glass of milk or milk product like yogurt or low-fat cheese or something that provides the same nutrients more tomorrow than you did yesterday.
Thanks, Judith, for calling. Appreciate it. Michael in Madison, your turn now. Hi, Michael.
Hi. This is an interesting show, but I've got a couple of, I guess, negative comments. My doctor here at the University of Wisconsin said that I had a discussion with him years ago, and he said, mother's milk is for babies, and cow's milk is for baby calves, and he said we really shouldn't be drinking lots of milk. And then I've also got a book here. I had a heart attack a number of years ago, and I have a book written by Dean Ornish. And he said that we shouldn't have any milk at all except maybe one glass of skim milk a day and certainly no butterfat. What are your comments on that? And I'll take my answers off the air.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
Yeah, I'll try to give you a short answer to something that I could easily talk about for an hour. The idea that cow's milk is for baby cows, and I mean, you could say lettuce is for rabbits. I mean, you know, there's lots of those kinds of things. I think milk is a legitimate part of an American's diet if they choose to drink it, and I would encourage most people to drink it if they can. I would agree with Dr. Ornish on one point, and that is that emphasizing the lowest fat version of milk that you can still enjoy would be the way to go from a calorie standpoint, if nothing else. And certainly for people at high risk of heart disease or people who've experienced heart disease, you want to keep your saturated fat intake down. Saturated fat, of course, affects your blood cholesterol, especially the LDL, the kind of bad cholesterol. So the My Pyramid says that we should reduce our intake of solid fats. And solid fats are things like hard stick margarine, Crisco and shortening kind of things, the fat that you can trim off of meats, and also the fat that comes from cream and dairy products. So that aspect I would agree with. Dr. Ornish goes farther than I would, and most physicians would agree with me, I think, that it's not necessarily to be quite as vegetarian as Dr. Ornish encourages people to be. It's certainly a choice if you want to follow that, but his recommendations of a very, very, very low-fat diet are not endorsed by the Dietary Guidelines for Americans, and they're not endorsed by Susan Nitzky.
All right. Thank you for calling. Norm in New Auburn, we turn to you next. Hi, Norm.
Hi. My question is about visit I had to Norway a couple of years ago. I had relatives there, and they had the biggest cows I've ever seen in my life in the barn. And those cows never left the barn. They were in the barn all the time. And I've always wondered why they did that. Would you know why?
I don't know anything about how they raise cows in Norway. I do actually hope to go to Oslo this summer for a conference, the International Society of Behavioral Nutrition and Physical Activity is meeting in Oslo in June.
Cool.
So maybe you could ask me after that. But no, I'm sorry. I don't have an answer to that question. I bet lots of listeners do, but I think I only have a minute left, and I want to answer Larry's question about the orange versus orange juice.
Yeah, and I think it's probably, and just in terms of off the top of my head, it's probably an issue relating to land and amount of land that a person has available.
Oh, yeah, that could very well be, and also traditions about whether you take the cow to the grass or the grass to the cow. But anyway, earlier we said how much sugar is in orange juice versus an orange.
Yes.
1 cup of orange juice has 26 grams of carbohydrate and 112 calories.
Okay.
One orange has 15 grams of carbohydrate and 62 calories, you know, depending on the size of the orange. So it's about twice as much.
So it's not four times, but it is twice as much, which is considerable amount, too.
And a lot of people don't drink a whole 8-ounce cup of orange juice when they drink orange juice. So I think that
more like 4 ounces.
Yeah, the comparisons aren't quite as dramatic as what you were led to believe.
Okay. Well, Sue, with that, I thank you very much, and we'll look forward to your next visit. Hope it's been a while, so I'm really glad to have you back. And let's get you back in a month and pick another topic in the nutrition area and do it all over again.
I'd be happy to come back.
Thank you, Sue. Sue Nitzke from the Department of Nutritional Sciences at UW-Madison. She's a UW Extension Nutritional Scientist. And sort of keeping along the dairy theme, we are going to talk with you next about cheese. Wisconsin, sort of a Super Bowl winner in the cheese area. Dave Leonardi, also known as the Cheese Guy, our guest next coming up here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.